I need somebody help, not just anybody help. You know I need someone help. When I was younger, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way. Now these days are gone and I'm not so self-assured. Now I find I've changed my mind and opened up the doors. Help me if you can, I'm feeling down, and I do appreciate you being round. Help me get my feet back on the ground. Won't you please, please help me? And now my life has changed in oh so many ways. My independence seems to vanish in the haze. But every now and then I feel so insecure. I know that I just need your light, I've never done before. Help me if you can, I'm feeling down, and I do appreciate you being round. Back on the ground, won't you please, please help me? When I was younger, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way. But now these days are gone, I'm not so self-assured. Now I've changed my mind, I'll open up the doors. You can, I'm feeling down, and I do appreciate you being round. Help me get my feet back on the ground. Won't you please, please help me? Help me, help me.
Ooh. That was the Beatles, Help. And we're trying to help you help us by listening to WGXC 90.7 FM Acra, Catskill, Hudson, Greene, and Columbia counties here in New York, broadcasting locally on 90.7 FM and globally online at WGXC.org. And this is the Art of the Hudson Valley, and I'm your host, Chad Weckler. And we're going to talk business today, a little creative business, a little sustainable business. And my guests, or let's say at this moment, guest, because I've got Rob Johansson here. He's the founder of Mid Hudson Media, a musician, and you'll hear him every Wednesday evening doing Live from the Red Dot open mic every Wednesday at 9 p.m. And hopefully one of the busiest people here in Columbia County, David Colby, who's the president and CEO of the Columbia County Chamber of Commerce, will muck his way through the snow and sleet and slush and bring himself into the studio.
Maybe he's on his way right now listening in his car,
realizing
we've just thrown him under the bus.
And maybe someone said, hey, they just mentioned your name on the radio. Aren't you supposed to be there? And let's see what happens.
So if anyone knows where David is.
And since we have Rob Johansson here, Rob, could you give our listeners a little background of what brought you here to the Hudson Valley?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And when did that happen?
That was a long time ago. I'm not a lifer, but to anyone that is a lifer, I'm still a New Yorker. I came up in 86. I moved up in 86.
A long time ago.
Yeah. Commuted to New York for 10 years from here, back and forth, train, mostly cars, and then kind of worked my way into finding employment here, kind of basically inventing employment here, working with the cable company, Mid-Hudson Cable, and forming Mid-Hudson Media, you know, as a division of the cable company, and starting to provide video production services and cable advertising services to the area, Columbia and Greene counties. And, you know, why I came up here was why most people are here. It was to not be in the city. I mean, born and raised in Brooklyn. Love it. You know, can go anywhere, do anything, and not feel intimidated by it. But, you know, I really need the space and the surrounding nature environment around me. And then gardening and you know, growing my own food, you know, has always been a thing that I've done, you know, for my adult life, all of my adult life. And so that's important. And you really can't do it that much, although I've got a flat now here in Hudson and in a 10 by 14 space. I've trellised my tomatoes 12 feet last year.
Wow.
It was quite a year for tomatoes last year and not the year before. Mm. But in Hudson, I still had them because the blight didn't really, you know, come in, you know, to this area because of all the protected surrounding, you know, buildings and I guess the concrete, you know, didn't like the mold spores that were going around. But, you know, it was really being drawn to the country. My parents had a country house up in Kane in New York. Mm. So I came here as a kid on weekends and, you know, came for the swimming at Queechy Lake, came for the skiing, you know, at that time was out at Biscay, but then, you know, from Jiminy Peak to Catamount to, you know, all around. So it's just a great, you know, place to live and to be able to kind of disconnect from New York, but you're 2 hours from New York,
yeah.
So you can go down any time you want. And then there's the Hudson River, you know, striper season's coming up, you know, in another month, so I'll be out fishing and catching my fish for the year and freezing them, and that's an exciting thing to know that I don't have to travel anywhere. The fish come up the river and they say, here we are.
Yeah.
And they're big fish. We're catching, you know, 40-inch fish.
Wow.
You know, and so there's a lot going on. I think as a whole, just the diversity of the wildlife and of the agricultural and, you know, even the Hudson River, you know, is all seeing, a cleansing, a resurgence, you know, a renewed sense of importance and also utilization. You know, more and more land is being utilized. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I'm doing now is just a passion is every year I help probably two or three, four different families start food gardens, you know, so that they can really start to understand a level of resiliency, you know, that they can have. It's their right to have in growing their own food and not being, you know, connected to the 20% increase in food from last year, and not being connected to all the chemicals and byproducts that go into the food that you eat. I mean, so there's a sense of knowing where your food comes from, knowing how to grow it, and getting that connection that is probably probably the most important thing, you know, in my life.
You were also involved in food pantries around the area and trying to bring food and donations of food. What's your background with the food pantries?
Well, that was primarily a cable initiative. Mm-hmm. Mid Hudson Cable and Mid Hudson Media basically created. This is our second year a campaign to get funds, collect funds at the Price Chopper, ShopRite, and different stores, get donations, and collect food, and then distribute it. But what was unique in this case, well, first we did it because of the need. You know, it's just growing and growing, and organizations are being funded less and less. Government really can't step in anymore because they're being asked to, you know, cut costs and downsize. So it really falls on the shoulders of the business community, entrepreneurs, and socially minded, you know, folks to step up and to participate and to care and to, you know, generate interest. And in this case, it was to generate food and money. And so what was interesting with this project is that we actually went and assessed each food pantry, the number of families served, the, you know, the benefits that they currently get, you know, federal benefits versus state benefits versus private donations, because in some cases the pantries already get food, federally subsidized food, and so why would we want to go and give them the same type of food? And in those cases, they're getting their peanut butters and other high protein, you know, kind of food sources, but we don't want to replicate that. And so in some cases they needed money, in other cases, you know, they needed other kinds of food. So we went deep into really figuring out the specifics of what the people needed. And, you know, they were very appreciative of that. And we also distributed, I don't know the exact number, but it was in the teens, if not 20, different food pantries. And we evenly distributed all the food based on the number of households and people that they serve. So everyone got the percentage, you know, based on the population of people that are being served here. And wish I had some more of that data, because it is troubling and there is a great need. And we look forward to doing more of that, as I would hope, you know, everyone does moving forward.
Well, how would a listener participate?
Well, in that case, you know, it was really an initiative of the cable company. So the cable subscribers, you know, were sent out notices in their bills, and you know, it was promoted, you know, that way. What we are looking for is more corporate underwriters or partners, you know, that can then, you know, help us, you know, get the word out. And we do it as a fall campaign, you know, so that it hits before, you know, Thanksgiving time, you know. But we do have plans for one or two events this spring, you know, so that we can, you know, maybe have a biannual fund allocation, you know, going out. So it's understanding or being aware of what's going on, you know, by people who are supporting the food need. But it's also taking initiatives on your own. I mean, there's a food pantry, I would think, within walking distance of anyone listening to the show right now. And to know and to find out who they are, where they are, and just figure out how you can participate yourself as an individual, I think is a great thing. It's a needed thing. And I would recommend it, you know, just as a way of filling your soul with some goodness by helping other people and helping other people not be hungry. Yes. I mean, that just blows my mind, you know, when you look at the rest of the world and here, that there are people hungry everywhere. And yet, you know, we see such abundance on another side, you know, as you look at, you know, just dining out and restaurants and everything else. So
I'm actually kind of curious about the new initiative that the Chamber started last year called LEAF, and I understand you're on the board of LEAF. And can you explain what LEAF's mission statement is, why it was created, and what the goals are?
I can, although I'd hope David was going to do this. So, David, if you're still driving and listening, you owe me. That's okay. But I was asked to join LEAF as one of its founding members to start the initiative. Well, LEAF, first of all, is a group of local businesses owners seeking through networking and shared knowledge to advance the ideas about local business ownership, local economies, and small is beautiful principles. And LEAF stands for the Local Economic Alliance for the Future. And we have a placeholder website. There's no content on it yet, but it will be leafcolumbia.org. The other part of LEAF is to involve more businesses and the public in a future based on people, planet, and profits to establish a more equitable economic and social atmosphere. And that's really part of our goal. And, you know, there's a whole encouragement around buying local, shopping local. We all know, you know, that, and we've all heard it throughout the years. But it's really going to come to hit home, I think, in the foreseeable future, that without that initiative and understanding in the local communities, local communities will struggle. So, you know, we want to bring about awareness, you know, about how spending local affects everybody. We're excited, and a couple of the things. So that's kind of an overview of what LEAF's good. About. We want to engage a new conversation, a new dialogue. We want we're going to have a LEAF Day on. You want me to get into that?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. On Tuesday, March 13th, it's a full day of events, free events, and it's from 1 o'clock to 7 o'clock. So I'm going to go through this a little bit here. So it's a Tuesday, March 13th, and our first free presentation is going to be Accelerating Community Capital, which will be a webinar. It's a Bally webinar, and Bally stands for?
Business Alliance of Local Living Economies.
Correct. Thank you. I was going to get that from the sheet. But and they're putting on, weekly, monthly webinars around all kinds of content. LEAF is in the process of becoming a Bally chapter. So that's the connection there. And they are an incredible national group and movement around local living economies. So they have a series of webinars, and this one's going to be on community loan funds from 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. It'll be a webinar, a live webinar. Which is from 1 to 2, and from 2 to 2:30, there'll be a local discussion. And that's, going to be held at the Chamber office, which is at 1 North Front Street in Hudson, and again from 1 to 2:30. Immediately after that, from 2:30 to 4, we're going to have a seminar called Greening Your Business, and that's going to be at the Chamber office again, and it's basically going to go through what's required to be the new New York State business form, which should be a benefit corporation. Mm-hmm. So there's not-for-profit corporations. This is the new form in New York State, which is a benefit corporation. And let's see, that workshop's going to explain, like I said, the benefit corporation, a new way that benefit that businesses can set up in New York State to create a profit and benefit to the community business. That's workshop is free of charge. The agenda is going to be open so that we can really maximize, you know, the needs of everybody there. And that's going to be facilitated by Stephen Varden. Stephen is also on our core group. And he's an accountant, especially interested in green accounting. And although he's not a CPA, he's been helping startup businesses, you know, fixing the books the right way and planning systems for 30 years. His business is Varden and colleagues. So he's going to be there and basically going after the triple bottom line, you know, and looking at, you know, how do you green your business and what should you, you know, be considering in that regard. So that's exciting, too. They'll be interactive. And then the third event is from 5 to 7 o'clock, and we kind of switch gears up and we go over to Club Helsinki. And that's going to be the first area's Green Drinks.
Ooh.
And Green Drinks is an initiative, national initiative, you know, in cities and towns all over the country. And we're going to start a chapter here in Hudson. And it's an agenda-less gathering of people who are active in changing the world. The events basically just open up, you know, new meetings, new connections, but I think more importantly to start new conversations, you know, around creating local resiliency. So we encourage people to come with their ideas, their hopes, you know, and dreams for this local economy. Business cards, you know, it's going to be a networking, you know, environment for the most part. And we're planning on having a few short presentations by a couple of businesses, small and large, in terms of what they're doing now that certifies them as green. And that could be in their waste stream. It could be in their purchasing stream. It could be in their energy stream. You know, there's different ways to kind of get a certificate, you know, in those realms. And that's another thing LEAF's looking to do, is to create a certification program locally around which you can be designated as being, you know, green minded in one area or another. We don't need to package it all together, so we're working on that too. So it's really changing the consciousness, changing the dialogue and the conversation, and looking at things with fresh eyes instead of, you know, recurring redundant patterns from the past. So,
well, if you were to pick one example of from beginning to end, what would qualify for a LEAF project?
It could be LEAF project. So we're really in the formative stages of what the projects would be. But let's look at the certification situation. So your energy, you know, needs are now being met to where you're a carbon neutral footprint, or you're a net metering, you know, is going back to the grid. Who's doing that? Who's currently, you know, certified or doing that to where they can be certified locally as being a verified business that has, you know, neutralized their energy footprint? So that would be an example. Same thing with waste. You know, who's composting or disposing of their waste, you know, in a 100% recycled environment. You know, that's another way of knowing that this company, you know, is committed to its recycling stream, you know, being zero impact on the planet. So those are some of the things, you know, that we're looking at. Bally's got an incredible amount of resources on their website. So we're not going to reinvent the wheel. We're going to strengthen the wheel here by collaborations, looking at the bioregional elements that are in the Hudson Valley, you know, how we connect to our region, you know, because that's truly how we were in the beginning. You know, we were diverse regions set apart by mountains and rivers and all the national surroundings. So it's interesting dialogue. It's new. It's exciting. And people should embrace it and should come to understand it, so that when the shifting change finally shifts and changes, that there's a better preparedness, a better understanding of what you can do, you know, to maintain your resiliency both personally through home gardens and your food, and then community-wide, again, through the food systems and local, but economics, energy, the environment, all of those go together and should be looked at from a local perspective.
I mean, I'll throw out an open question because I don't know.
Another one?
Yeah, I don't know if you know the answer or not, but I find it interesting that Hudson, even a year ago, it was what they would call a food desert. Not talking about the restaurants, but the availability of fresh fruits and vegetables and meats and fish and eggs. And all of a sudden, that has really turned around. And I wonder, this program specifically looks like it may help a lot of people who want to grow fruits and vegetables and bring them to market. Could that possibly be?
Yeah, and I think that starts first with community capital, and these webinars at, on Leaf Day are going to address that very specifically. There's a new book that just came out from Michael Schumann, Local Dollars, Local Cents, How to Shift Your Money from Wall Street to Main Street and Achieve Real Prosperity. It's a resilient communities guide, and it really deals around the food, the localizing of the food systems, and that's going to be critical, for our economic, success. So I think it's viable and possible, but we have got to get local capital behind, investments in new agricultural initiatives and small farms and education. Mm-hmm. You're seeing a lot of that last week in the Taconic School conference that was held there. Hawthorne Valley, obviously a big player, in the county here, Columbia County, around sustainable agriculture, and a great resource for people coming to the area and speaking, and these are world-class, speakers doing incredible, both technological and economical and ecological, initiatives. So we're in, I think, the right place at the right time to be a part of the shift here and to manage it better than urban areas and other areas that are deserts too, but that don't have the agricultural base behind them and the land and the beauty and all the resources that we do have here. So I think getting capital into the community and figuring out how that all comes to play is really the first step, opening that up and getting investors to look at maybe stepping aside from the double-digit returns for their money and starting to look at what's the social return on your money for the community, and isn't that enough?
Yes.
When does money for investment purposes have to be more? Why can't it just be in and of itself sustainable at a neutral level? It's there. Mm-hmm. It's always there. You got it. You don't need more, but let's get it going in the right place and have it going in a way that creates some more, social consciousness, and particularly my passion being around food, that's where it all starts for me, and that's the connection to the other kind of passion, which is peak oil. I've done a lot of video work around the subject, and energy is so tied to our food. I mean, 80% of all the costs of our food is in whether it's fertilizers and transportation, and last year food rose 20%. This year, they're looking at the same kind of, increase. You're seeing things, with going on with milk right now, prices. And what's interesting, Chad, is that the United States no longer controls its oil prices. What controls it is, the 7 billion people in the emerging countries and how their energy needs, are being met. And the same is becoming true with food. Because as we export, to increase our growth and to, keep up with ourselves and try and catch up to what we've missed out on, we're setting a stage for global food pricing, that's being based on another demand. So we are no longer going to be able to control our food costs here. And it will be, I think, over time, a lessening of the cheap food. It'll become more expensive from what we're used to. But then that's going to kind of impact the what's perceived to be the high cost of organic and local agriculture. Of course, the quality's better, everything about it's better, but there'll be a kind of a a neutralizing of the gap between the two, I think, over time, to where when the cheap food becomes more expensive, it'll be easier for the people that are, you know, at risk and don't have the money, you know, to look back at local agriculture. And then I get back to the food gardens. If you want to save some money, just start planting some stuff.
So are you saying that, from what I understand, that basically in the oil consumption or oil production and also the food production, we've sort of unfortunately lost our individual grasps, and now it's becoming more of a monopoly where there are maybe only a half a dozen major food manufacturers that are creating the packaged foods available for consumers. And like you say, I think we're in a very unique position to, as an individual and living in such a rich land of sustainable food, you are definitely positioned nicely.
Yeah, I would say so. And it becomes more like the local farmers even themselves, if they're being, if they're selling their product to a bulk buyer or a wholesaler, and that wholesaler is selling to an exporter, and that exporter is selling to another country, that country's needs have set the prices for the local farmers, you know, produce or products, you know, whether that, like, again, milk, you know, being then, you know, broken down to dehydrated milk and shipped out as dry milk, all those things. And I'm talking a little bit outside of my knowledge base with the specifics of that, but that's how the chain, you know, goes. And I think it's the concept that we no longer have control of the prices. It is a globally controlled environment right now, and that's a big shift, because the U.S. used to be able to control through its own demands and its own needs, but now that has become a global initiative.
I do like driving on Spook Rock Road here locally and passing HomeQuest Farms and seeing their large solar panels. To me, that's an unusual thing to see, a farm actually having solar panels. It's part of they're harvesting solar energy.
Yeah, you're seeing them pop up all over the place. Roxbury Farms got some solar infrastructure. I know the farm at Miller's Crossing just, you know, Chris and Katie just put in some, you know, solar, and it's great to see, you know, and they're looking at long-term sustainable concepts. And so energy is one of them. And, you know, it's a long-term return on your investment, and that's a commitment, you know, to doing or making the right decision, but for the long term. And we're really stuck in many cases when you live week to week, month to month, paycheck to paycheck. That kind of strategy just doesn't come into play. It's really hard to do. But I think it's a perfect match to take a look at farms and solar infrastructure and neutralizing, you know, their costs. And then if you're organic or biodynamic, you know, you're not, you know, bringing in outside, you know, resources, fertilizers, and again, you're less connected to the energy costs. So if you think about the costs that farmers have who are biodynamic or organic, they're going to be a lot less than traditional farmers, because they're taking care of the land. They're, you know, feeding the land, you know, within its own resources on the farm. And that will also keep their food prices, I think, at a more of a fixed rate than being so tied, you know, to the energy costs.
I sort of want to segue a little bit and talk about business and media and how businesses let people know that they have a business, they have a service and a product. And quite frankly, I don't know a lot about Mid-Hudson Media. I've been in the lovely building where you actually produce shows right in-house. You're involved in websites. When a client comes to you and says, Rob, this is my business, what do you recommend that I do to get that word out that I have a great product and a great service?
Well, the options are just unlimited and daunting, and I guess everyone's outcomes are different. So what you want to achieve really defines where you want to market and how you want to tell your story and where you want to tell your story. We've got a lot of great local resources. And I think, you know, well, we could go to the music festival, you know, that you and I are both so familiar with, and look at just what Facebook did, you know, to getting that off the ground versus traditional marketing and dollars being spent. We didn't have them. They weren't available to us. It wasn't going to happen. But yet, you know, the internet, the web, the emails, and then the social networks really really worked. You know, it came to be what was necessary to make things happen and to create a kind of a good collective consciousness. But, you know, number one is your website and your email. And I talk a lot about virtual communities. You know, what are you doing to build your virtual community? So when we at the Chamber and through LEAF do these webinars, how do we accommodate the hundreds, if not thousands, of people who didn't come to the chamber office or to the college or wherever it is? And that's the concept I think that I like to look at most, you know, when businesses are working on a strategic plan, is here's the people that you can reach, you know, traditionally face-to-face, but it's really not scalable unless you scale with people and infrastructure. And so by diversifying into a virtual community and by providing meaningful content around transition, around change, around local community capital, you know, it's being delivered now at your own convenience, at your house and over your internet or your television when you want it, and when you're able to, you know, to spend the time versus 2 o'clock, I got to be here, I got to be there. And, you know, life isn't getting any easier or simpler, unfortunately. So we have to use technology and communication technology in a way that understands what that virtual community, that disconnected community, how they interact, what are they looking for, and how do you deliver the message? We can't get people online to listen for an hour. You can get them to do that in person. So now we have to take the content that we physically document and chop it up into small, you know, kind of bites, you know, that people can take in on their phones, iPads, tablets, whatever they got, because they're not sitting and watching for an hour. The statistics give us that information. So now, when you're presenting something in a physical environment, you need to consider your virtual community, because they're typically maybe going to be 10 times the size of your physical audience. And that's a hard shift for a lot of people to kind of put their arms around. And some people just like the face-to-face and will fight it till the end. And that's fine, too. But that's not scalable. And if you realize that and your outcomes are okay with that, then that's a perfect solution. So it's not one size fits all by any means. And everything's getting cheaper. I mean, what we used to do websites for in the past, you know, was a lot different than the prices that we do websites for now, because everything's commoditized. You know, you can buy an application and put it on your website, you know, for a few dollars versus hand coding and programming it and putting it all together. So
I find it interesting when I'm at the in the checkout line at ShopRite. You know, there are screens there giving you all sorts of information. I'm sitting in a waiting room with the doctors at the hospital. Used to be you would watch a national program, and now the hospital has its own talk show, you might say.
Yep.
That's an interesting – I like that. It's I mean, there are magazines. I see fewer people picking the magazines up, and I see them watching the screens more or pulling out their smartphones and keeping up with their Facebook or messages. Things are moving very quickly.
Well, we put that together for the hospital. It's called Your Health. And we basically came to them and said, you know, more and more people, no one's reading, really, is the reality, or less people are reading. And when you're able to present materials to where people can sit back and absorb content, like the television does, it's a lot easier to understand and retain the information. So you can see that in doctor's office, you know, waiting rooms now, you know, on the television, on Channel 11, Community Channel 11 on Mid-Hudson Cable, and you can see it on the website. And it's indexed by clips and by speakers, and it's been very well received. And one of the big, I think, pluses has been the hospital itself, you know, the people within the hospital. Mm. I mean, we honor, you know, the employees of the month, the employees of the quarter, and you know, we give them a sense of ownership, too. And oh, that's who that is. Yeah. And you put a name to a face versus it just being, you know, a plaque or an award that you get. This is something, you know, I guess it's what they say is true. You know, if it's on TV, it's real. We all know that that's not true, but that's the perception. So it's worked out very well, and I see that being an opportunity for the future. You know, you see more and more town meetings, you know, being recorded. Yes. You know, GXC recording, you know, the audio portions. We've got a gentleman in town here doing the supervisors meeting, the Hudson Common Council meeting, Dan Udell.
Yeah.
Great, you know, community guy, and you know, and then those get rebroadcast. And over time, you know, they'll be streamed live and fully indexed. It's the new matter of public record will be the digital archives, not the physical presence or someone writing on their legal pad to, you know, what did they say last week? You know, there's great archives here at the radio station. So if you ever want to know, I don't know that I'll go back and listen to myself here, Chad, but if I did, I'd be able to. And that's really very useful. I mean, it's a great tool to have.
No, I actually took advantage of the archives this morning when I saw Victor Mendolia on his Facebook said, you know, my program yesterday with Don Moore is now archived on WGXC and 7:30 this morning. I listened to it through the computer, and I was totally intrigued. And I think something that WGXC offers that I don't believe a lot of radio stations do, and it's... For me, it's very helpful when you do have a busy schedule or you're not in your car or home or you're in a meeting and you really wanted to listen to something, an interview, because I find people very interesting.
The focus on community here at the station and what it does and what it supports is great. And, you know, the archives are just a great resource. And even on the creative side, so I do the open mic, there's musicians who've never played in public before. We're recording them. We're streaming them live. They go back to the archives. They've got a critical, you know, sense, and they're by themselves in their own rooms. Yeah. I always say, you know, you could cry or you could love yourself, you know, whatever it is. But the archives become a creative tool then for self-assessment and understanding of what they did wrong, what they liked, what they didn't like. And you don't get that any other way. So it's really been very interesting. I like it.
I'm going to take a short break. You're listening to WGXC, the heart of the art of the Hudson Valley, and I'm speaking with Rob Johansson, and we'll take a little music interlude here.
Thank you.
And we are taking care of business. That's Bachman Turner Overdrive from 1973. I love that song, as do seems to be millions of other people. And that song is used so many different places for, I mean, we're talking 30 years. there's
the power of music.
The power of music is very important, and
it's universal.
And the power, going back to local business and supporting local business, we were talking during the song about how important the creative economy and local economy, supporting local economy, is not only vital, but it's certainly for, let's say, the city of Hudson, small city of 7,000-8,000 people or so, filled with many individually owned businesses who then, either to advertise or to buy their products, they are working with other local businesses.
No, absolutely. The small to mid-sized business feed more small to mid-sized business. They create partnerships, local partnerships. You know, the larger businesses that come in, you know, they adhere to their corporate office connections wherever they may be, and they have a disconnected set of support services. Sometimes they're local, but for the most part, you know, they're not as saturated with local participation as the small and mid-sized businesses are. And so around creative economies, I mean, this area is just so rich with creatives. I mean, art, music, dance. I mean, everything that you see here in Hudson is reflected in this creative, consciousness. It's a collective mindset that's developing, and creativity in the food and in the agriculture and in the arts. So you had a list there, I think, of just some creative.
Let me just do a quick list. I was looking at creative sectors, and let's just say advertising, architecture, arts, that's galleries and museums, antiques, auctions, fairs, crafts, design, whether it's fashion design, graphic design, landscape design, fashion again, film, video, toys, games, photography, software, music, performance, publishing, whether it's electronic or tangible, television, radio, smartphones is unbelievable to me, cultural events, and we're talking parades, and when I think about events such as, let's say, a wedding, that is such a sort of a picture of you need music, so you hire band members, or you hire a DJ. You need food, so you either use an in-house food facility or your catering.
Yeah, it's a great example. And weddings here in Hudson, from Helsinki to Basilica to the park, everywhere. I think I was told that there's a wedding at the same week of the Hudson Music Festival, the second weekend of August, that has booked every room in town. So
last year,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, so, I mean, the weddings have really become we've become a wedding destination place. Mm-hmm. But to your point, the wedding comes in and it's fully diversified, across all these small businesses that are all working together to create this environment for other people to come in and experience. And that's the beauty, this collective creativity is people come into Hudson, they feel, something that's different because we are truly collaborating at a very local level. Hopefully government will start to pick up that and start to run with that, where most governments, local governments don't. But that takes, leadership, that's thinking ahead as opposed to, working still with the patterns and habits of the past. Mm. We're not going to fix anything. We've got to chart new territory here, and creative economies, are critical, especially here, I think. And I would make the case that, local dollars is local sense, and that, if you have some money that you're considering investing, or, some investment dollars that you're going to take out because the stock market's just crazy, I'd ask you to really strongly consider where your passions are in this local community. Is it art? Is it dance? Is it music? Is it food? And reach out and, take a look. call the chamber, you know, ask them about the LEAF initiative, come to our LEAF day, you know, and just see what we're talking about. And that'll segue me into another LEAF plug.
Good.
All right. Good. So we got LEAF day on Tuesday, March 13th from 1 to 7 p.m. There'll be three events. All events are free at 1 o'clock. At the Chamber office on 1 North Front Street, we're going to have Accelerating Community Capital, and that is a live webinar for 1 hour, a Bally group, which is the Business Alliance for Local Living Economies, and the topic is going to be revolving loan funds. You know, how do we shift our money, you know, to a local Main Street-oriented, you know, mindset and create social change in doing so. The second is a free workshop, Greening Your Business. And that will help explain the new New York State Benefit Corporation rules and regulations. And then the third event is going to be a networking green drinks event at Club Helsinki, and that's from 5 to 7. And again, this is all on Tuesday, March 13th, LEAF Day. And that's just basically a gathering, agendaless gathering of active people, you know, in our community who want to engage in a different conversation, open up a new dialogue. That's on March 13th, LEAF Day. Call the chamber if you'd like some more information, and they can be reached at 965-1660, and that's the Columbia County Chamber of Commerce. So that
was LEAF Day. And since Dave is not here speaking as Dave, because you know, I would plug going down to the Chamber of Commerce, which is at the Washington Hose at the base of Warren and Front Street, and they've just published they're open for business in Columbia County, their 2012 directory. Those are all the business members of Columbia County. So if you are looking for services, that's a great resource to go to.
Great place to start. And that's all you need to do. Ask a neighbor. Ask a friend. The Business Coalition listserv, you know, it's all about, hey, I need an electrician. Who can you recommend? Mm-hmm. The next thing you know, there's three or four recommendations, you know, from, you know, I'd trade my firstborn child for this guy. He's so good, you know, to, you know, just the good. But it really works, you know, when you ask a neighbor and a friend who they recommend, and it keeps the local connections alive.
And I'm going to do my own plug. And it's if you're a visual artist, a musician, you're an author, a writer, and you're someone who does not have the business skills that you think you don't have but would like, there's a new wonderful program that's going to take place in April, but the deadline for you to apply is a week from today, March 7th, and that's through the it's called the NYFA, which is the New York Foundation for the Arts Mark 12 Boot Camp. You can go. It's very easy. I'll send you to the artscolumbia.org website. Right on their homepage, they have a link that goes to the NYFA website. And this is the first time this kind of program has been available for all of these artists of different disciplines. And I highly recommend, even if you are not one of those kinds of artists, that you do know somebody, please recommend them to go to the artscolumbia.org website to investigate the boot camp. And the sponsors are the Woodstock Birdcliff Guild, the Center of Photography at Woodstock, the Hudson Opera House, and the Hudson Music Festival is also one of the partners on that event. So I think we've been talking about a lot of wonderful business opportunities. Sometimes it's a little daunting to find out where they are. I definitely would like to recommend keeping tuned to WGXC. Go to the WGXC.org website, check out their events, organizations, galleries. You can go to that event page and put up your own event, and WGXC will put it out as a community service. A wonderful thing, at least one place to go to find out where everything is.
Yeah, make a commitment to get out of your house once a week. If you stay in-house and watch TV every night and just that's your life, change it up. Get out. Go to an event. Support an artist reception. You know, just go out and support the arts community, whether it's music, art, dance, anything. I just recommend, if you haven't had that experience recently, change it up. Get out.
So I want to thank the invisible Dave Colby for wanting to be here. Really, he really did, and he must be making some nice business arrangements here in the county. And the one who is not invisible here in the studio is Rob Johansson, who's the founder of Mid-Hudson Media. He's a musician. You can hear him play at Kamea, his accordion, and quite a few other places.
Whatever. Whoever will have me.
Is that accordion in the trunk of your car always?
It's not supposed to be, but it is. it shouldn't be weathered like that, but I never know when I'm going to play. So it's fun. And, you know, you see that everywhere. I mean, everyone's carrying their instruments around. Mm. You go up and down the street, you know. I mean, we had that great shot on the website of the guy carrying his stand-up bass on his shoulder walking down Warren Street looking for a place to play. So it's good imagery.
And thank you to all our listeners. This has been the Art of the Hudson Valley. I will be returning again next month, the first Thursday of the month, 2 to 3 p.m., with another interesting topic. And thank you all for listening. And we're going to go out on a little Mr. James Brown, Living in America.
Get out and support art.
Create.
Time.